Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
And we kick off hour number two with Trent Dilfer. Always brings the energy, the passion, whenever he was on ESPN. Of course, whenever he was playing in the NFL. And now he's bringing it as the head coach at Lipscomb Academy here in Nashville. Trent, welcome, man.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
I love that you're wearing your Super Bowl ring.
I wore it about 15 times in 18 years. Stayed in my underwear drawer. And when I got this job, I said, well, the kids would probably like it. It hasn't come off since. I probably have barbecue sauce in it and a bunch of other stuff because it hasn't come off. It's been really weird. I wear this old plastic one for my wedding ring, and then I'm wearing this Super Bowl one. It's kind of awkward.
The kids take note?
They like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Whenever. The little kids love it the best. I've spent a lot of time with the fifth, sixth graders, seventh graders. They love it. I put it on their fingers. They take pictures. They're posting on Instagram. They get a kick out of it.
Whenever we heard that you were the new head coach at Lipscomb Academy, I think not just us, but everyone was surprised. Like, really? Is that
not
true?
More surprised than me. Okay. I promise. No one's more surprised
than me. We should be surprised.
Yes. I give the Reader's Digest version. We can get more into this. I don't know how long we have. I can stay here all day, but...
We accept.
I had turned down when I was with the Niners in 06, 07, they were trying to fast track me into management, into coaching. Norv Turner, who was the offensive coordinator there, Mike Nolan, all the staff was like, you know, we can fast track you through this thing quick. And I didn't want to. I had girls. And my argument's always been when you have daughters, it's really hard to have them around the football environment because they can't spend that much time with dad. You can't have them roam around the locker room. You can't have them up in the offices. They can't be out on the field. So I was really concerned that I didn't want to jump into something that would pull me away from my three daughters. So I said no. And then multiple, when I was at ESPN, every year college jobs would come up, pro jobs would come up. And, I'd entertain it because it was flattering. I'd be lying to say it wasn't flattering. You're talking to a GM, you're talking to a president of a university, and you start going down the road, and it was always the same thing. My daughters are in junior high. They're in high school. They're playing, you know, they're all American volleyball players and going to national camps and this and that. And I wanted to be part of that. So I kept saying no. And the last 2 years since we got chopped from ESPN has been great for me. Actually, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But at the same time, I was really lacking calling. I was basically living the American dream, retired at 44. Don't have to work, traveling all around the country, doing all cool stuff, but just kind of felt like, what am I giving back? You know, besides my family, what difference am I making? What impact am I having? For 10 days a year, I got to go be the head coach of Elite 11 and have an impact there and, you know, have a piece in Tua's life or Trevor's life or Jared's life or whoever it is. But that's 10 days. And I just felt like I was made for something more. That I'd learned so much through my journey through football and growing and my life's story that I wanted to give some of that back. And I knew something was coming. I was actually negotiating. My agent was negotiating to get back into another network, and I felt sick to my stomach about it. I'm like, I do not want to go back on camera. I do not want to go back to that. I just, as cool as it was for 8 years, 9 years, it's not what I wanted to be. And I really started asking myself, what do I want to be? And as that happened, this weird series of events came up where this Lipscomb Academy opportunity came up. And it happened literally in 5 days. It went from zero chance of coaching to a press conference that quick. It was nuts.
Where did you move here from? I'm picturing that you were out west.
Still. I was in California for the last 10 years for nine of the last 10 years, and we moved to Austin a year and a half ago. One of my dearest friends.
From one hip city to the only city hipper than that.
I agree. This place is awesome, by the way. One of my best friends is Phil Dawson, who just retired from the Cardinals, kicked in the NFL for 21 years. Our wives are great friends. Our kids are great friends. We've kind of done life together. And I'm a little ashamed to say I've done life with a kicker, but that's a side note. And I had other, Kevin Millar, who's been a friend forever. He's in Austin. I had a bunch of friends in Austin. I wanted to get the heck out of California for some tax reasons, and for other reasons. So we got to Austin, loved it, loved every second of it. Saw ourselves being there for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And then all of a sudden here off to Nashville we come.
So why Nashville? Why Lipscomb Academy?
It was not targeted. It was just an opportunity that came up that was unique. It's a special, special place. And I know what it's known for. I get it. I've been around long enough that people say, well, that's that Church of Christ school down there off Granny Pike. And it's so much more than that. It is truly a sleeping giant from an athletic standpoint. They have a great history. But more importantly, they have great people. The people I've met there have been as good of people as I've ever met in my life. They're committed to building a monster, and that's going to happen very quickly. And just the enthusiasm, the passion around the community is something that really appealed to me. And now Keith Wilkes going to coach our defense.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
They just had a quick handshake deal. Kidding. Very, very quick negotiation.
That was my follow-up because, I mean, half joking, you guys were talking about him, you know, possibly coaching.
Well, we've coached together through the Nike grassroots for years and have a good connection. He hated me as a player and I hated him as a player. And we've developed friendship through the Nike grassroots stuff. He's an unbelievable coach. And a lot of these guys are. He's got a coach's mind for the game as well as being a great player. I've seen him work with these kids at the Elite 11 in the Nike opening and just done a great job. So I've promised I'm going to have the best staff in high school football. I'm 75% there. Bringing on people that can have influence on our boys and teach them good football is something that's important to me, and I'm going to cast the net wide to get as many of them as possible. I've been texting Jared Allen. I already have Mark Mariani. I got other NFLers coming on staff that I'll announce soon. This is going to be, I would argue, the best staff in the entire country in high school football.
What has that process been like when you pick up the phone and you have so many friends who played in the NFL and a lot of them living here in Nashville, and you make the sales pitch, hey, come work with high school football players with me at Lipscomb?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It's we all have this bug inside of us. Most of us sequester it because we're making a bunch of money doing other things and being cool and being ex-NFLers. That's kind of the nutshell of what most of us do. And then we all see that, wait a second, somebody poured into our life at this age. We never would have been what we are without somebody pouring into our life. And then you start seeing potential in kids. And I think that's what is the differentiator here, where everybody else says they can't. We tend to look as they can. We tend to say, well, no, yeah, he might only be 5'8", 182 pounds, but he's got something inside of him that I had in me, and I'm going to pull that out of him. And if you get the most out of that kid, that's going to change his life. He's not going to play college football. He's not going to play in the NFL, but he's going to use the lessons learned to go have an impact as a lawyer or a doctor or a sportscaster or whatever it is. We want to help these kids kind of reach their potential, because that's what we all lived. Is it was glamorous and it was cool, but what we really lived was this kind of inner journey of seeing stuff come out of us that we didn't know we had. You know, I'm getting ready to go play outside backer at Cal and go for 44 points in a basketball game, and Fresno State says you want to come play quarterback. I didn't even know where Fresno was. Couldn't point to it on a map. But a coach saw something in me, and then 3 years later, I'm an All-American and Heisman Trophy candidate. That isn't nothing I did. That's the coaches pointed out of me. And I started discovering every day, whoa, I'm pretty good at this. Whoa, I'm pretty good at that. And that's the journey we want these kids to experience, to see something that's inside of them that the world has said, oh, you can't, or you're not good enough, or you should go sit in that seat. And we're saying, no, there's seats way higher than that you should go sit in.
So how much did you come to like being a TV guy, Dilfer Dimes and all of that? Like, were you dipping your toe in the water at the beginning of that?
Yeah.
And then it took off for you?
I had done 2 years while I was playing with NFL Network for the playoffs. So they had me come in during the playoffs, and I would do, I think, divisional weekend, championship weekend, Super Bowl. I'd do like 5 days of the Super Bowl with Rich Eisen and those guys. And I love the teaching part of it. I loved the football narratives got weird there for a while, and people didn't even know what happened to them. But football, the analysts that were in that time period had really, really simplified the game while the game was really getting complex. And I loved coming out of it and being fresh and having the quarterback's last coach's mind that I could take people deeper into the game than they've ever been taken before. And I liked that part of it. So I didn't have to audition for anybody. That those 2 years at NFL Network, I had offers from NBC, CBS, Fox, and ESPN right out of the gate when I retired. And I remember sitting with my wife. I'm like, I can't. You know, everybody else is having to go on audition and do this stuff. And it's not the Super Bowl ring because I'm the worst quarterback that ever won a Super Bowl. So it's not that. It's I got to be decent at this. I should go try to do it. And the ESPN offer was awesome. The workflow was great because even from the beginning, I got to choose the days I worked. I didn't have to be the Tuesday through Thursday guy in Bristol, Connecticut. So I was the Sunday, Monday guy. And so that worked for my life, my kids' volleyball, our schedules. And I really liked it the first few years. I really, really liked it when it was about teaching, when it was longer form, when it wasn't about debate, when it wasn't producers and executives saying, well, there has to be more controversy. When you're in production meetings, like, okay, what do we want to teach people about the Patriots? You know, what do we want to talk about with quarterbacks? What do we want to talk about teaching defense? I was in. I was the first guy up. I was energized by it. I was studying all week. I had an office. To this day, I still do, where I have access to every piece of film that any GM or then or head coach has. I got my five TVs. I got multiple monitors. I'm watching everything. I mean, I was in it. I was 9 hours a day in it, just like a coach. And that part I loved. And then there was this time in the middle of my career at ESPN, and I can't define exactly when it was, but you probably lived it too, when everything had to be first take. Everything had to be hot takes. Everything had to be clickbait. Everything had to be controversial. And I'm like, this isn't me. And I had, you know, I was still really close to a lot of my friends in the NFL, and it turned that night in Kansas City when I was stupid enough to say the Patriots are done. I'll never forget why I said it, because I talked to somebody in New England, I'll never give up the name, and they were just complaining pregame, just nonstop about we're done, we're different, different culture, things are bad, blah, blah, blah. And I went and I talked to my producer just off camera and was kind of telling him about it. He's like, you got to go with this postgame. Like, we got to go with this. No matter what happens, this is what you got to talk about. And my mind kind of got tweaked, and I went on camera and I said, you know, this is Monday Night Football. It's the highest rated moment of the week for ESPN. And I said, they're done. They're weak. They're different. Blah, blah, blah. And trust me, Twitter lets me know every day how stupid that was. And it kind of from like the next 2 years, I was different. You know, I was more ornery. I wasn't happy with it. I would find myself getting into stupid arguments over dumb things. And that's just not who I am. I'm a teacher. I like to celebrate the good stuff in football, not harp on the bad stuff. And it was kind of this couple year journey where I just wasn't liking as much, but I was making so much money. I had such a great schedule. I could do so many cool things that it was like, I was kind of stuck. And when I got fired, it was the most awesome experience of my life, because I was like, oh, it's like the shackles were taken off. Like, I don't have to think those thoughts anymore. I don't have to deal with people I don't want to deal with. I don't have to worry about the Kaepernick conversation all the time. I'd lay in bed at night thinking about how am I going to handle the next radio show that I got to do. Because you got to remember, I was doing 30 radio shows too. So you're not just a TV personality. You're talking to every reporter in the country. Peter King, Sam Farmer, you know, whoever it is calling you every day because you know the ins. You're calling me, whatever it is. You have 30 radio shows a week, so you're being asked the same questions all the time. And it's just a matter of time before you say something stupid because you're irritable or tired or fed up with a dumb question or fed up with a dumb narrative. And I'm just done. I was just absolutely done with it, and I could not be happier that first year out when I still, you know, people still called me. I still have my friends in the media. There's so many great people in the media that I still want to help out. But I didn't wake up every morning like, oh, I got 19 things on my calendar, and it's all 19. There's going to be four topics. It's going to be Kaepernick. It's going to be, you know, helmet to helmet. It's going to be this. It's going to be that, because that's what gets ratings, and that's what you guys are paid to do, is drive ratings. And I'm just not a drive ratings guy. It means nothing to me. Never once in 9 years did I look at what a show was rated. I didn't give a rip what it was rated. I want to do something that was good and different.
Trent Dilfer, our guest, you were very good, great on air in your delivery and how you went about preparing for those broadcasts. What was it like feeling like, I mean, you knew you were very good at it, but you also, it seems like you hated doing it and battling both aspects of that, because you didn't quit, you were fired. So you took the money and took the check and still dealt with it. How'd you battle that?
I love the Monday night. What got me up, what got me going was Monday Night Football. The energy of Monday Night Football, Steve Young, one of my best friends in the world, being with him. The year we did it with Ray Lewis is my the funnest year I ever had in TV was Ray, Steve, and I. Stuart Scott, unbelievable friend, the late Stuart Scott, being with him, the relationships here, the crew of Monday night to this day, they'll text me every Monday night. You know, the engineers, the producers, the film guys, the audio guys, we became family. So that was cool. That was team. Monday night was truly a team. And that's why we were good at it. Sunday's a different beast. It's not that those people are bad, but that's the show that they sell on. So you sell all your sponsorships. You make all your money on that Sunday morning show. And when I started it, it was teaching football and doing game stuff. And then it became clickbait, because that's what the advertisers wanted.
Where do you think they're headed with that show? Charles Woodson already out, speculation that's going to be completely revamped again.
They've said that every year. And listen, if Seth hears this, Seth's our boss, I love him like a brother. He was great to me, but you know, I heard this 8 times. We're going to revamp it. It's going to turn it over. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But because it's just is what it is. Like, do you watch it?
No. I'm in a press box.
Yeah, okay, but none of my friends watch it. Matt Hasselbeck's one of my best friends. He took my job. Doesn't bother me one bit. I don't watch it. I can call Matt and find out what he thinks about a game. Or you know what? You don't even have to, because you've already used up all the material you're talking about Sunday, Monday through Friday, because you're doing radio show after radio show, interview after interview. You only have so much material.
Can't save stuff.
What comes out Sunday morning is recycled junk from the whole week. And by the way, I can go to this and go to Bleacher Report, or go to anything else and get, you know, while I'm sitting down for 2 minutes, I can get all I need to know about the games coming up. And by the way, most people, what they care about is the over-under, the spread, because they got money on it. That's just the reality of where our sport's gone, is nobody wants to learn. Nobody wants new information. Nobody wants to know that when the Patriots, you know, when Tony Romo was telling you on the Super Bowl that they're doing some creative thing, no, they weren't. They're playing the exact same coverage they played the entire year. They didn't do one thing different in the Super Bowl. I talked to Sean McVay for 30 minutes last night. He said they did not change one thing. They just played better than us. But we have to make it something bigger, because that's what people want to hear. But no, they didn't. They lined up and they played the same three coverages they played the entire season.
When you were talking about sort of the controversy baiting aspect of it and going for ratings and clicks, and not necessarily substance. We have a guest on this show weekly, Greg Cosell from NFL Films.
Love Greg.
Great at breaking down the
love
film.
Greg.
We love stuff like this.
He's awesome.
So we know exactly where you're going with what you're talking about. Did you ever feel like at ESPN?
Do you know how much Greg's show rates?
Not well.
One of the worst rated shows on TV.
Fun at 4:30 in the morning.
It's awful. The rating's awful. It's the best show in football for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
By far. Nothing's close. And Matt Bowen, who's on it now, is as smart of a human as there is in the football world. And that is a great show if you like football. But they do zero clickbait. They do zero controversy. This is facts. But here's what bothers people, because people don't want to know the truth. They don't want to know that Marcus Mariota is not very good getting a number three. They don't want to know that. And they don't want to know the why. They just want to have an opinion. Marcus good, Marcus bad.
Trent, when you were at ESPN, you talked about them always wanting controversy and clickbait material. Did you ever feel like ESPN frowned upon certain sides of an argument?
Of course.
If you had an opinion about it.
Of course.
Did they come to you with that?
Never came to me. I'll give them this, all my leadership there. And again, still friends with most of them. Never once they tell me what to say. People think they tell you what to say. Now, they'll drop something from a rundown if they don't like what you're going to say. That happens all the time.
And that happened to you?
Oh, yeah, lots of times. Whereas strong on one side that wasn't the side they wanted, it just disappears from the show.
Give us one example of that, could you?
Would Kaepernick be one of those?
No, Kaepernick, I spoke my mind, and I've talked to Colin about what I said. I didn't say anything wrong about Colin. I used it's the context about what I said about Colin that was taken out of, well, how do you say that? The context was taken out of context, I guess. I was talking about him as a backup quarterback, what his role as a backup quarterback was. And it got taken as he should just shut up. He shouldn't stand up for social injustice. And that's never what I said. I said, as a backup quarterback, he's got to be very careful about the team dynamics and what it does to the starting quarterback. Because the quarterback room is the most powerful room in the building. Not just the starter, what comes out of that room. Because that room can either cause controversy or take controversy out of the locker room. It can either bring us together or it can tear us apart. And my point was that the platform that he had to be very careful about considering the role he was in for team dynamics, not for social injustice, not for world dynamics, for team dynamics. And I was asked the question, how does this relate to team dynamics? Because I made sure I was asked that question because we do have meetings. But yet again, the way the media works, Bleacher or Barstool or whoever takes a sound bite and you wake up the next morning and I'm a racist. Okay. Well, let's actually go back and see what I said and how I said it and the question I was asked. And then by the way, I'm talking to Colin on the side and saying, hey, you saw what I said, right? Did you see the whole interview? Yes, we're all good. Got it.
Fifth-year salary coming from Marcus Mariota this year bumps up to almost $21 million and a decision to be made, I would hope, not until after they see some stuff this year. Give us your scouting report on him, please.
I love him. I'd take him in a heartbeat as my quarterback, but I'd build an offense around him where I ran him more, not less. I'd be more play action. I'd be more half-field reads. And by the way, there's guys going to multiple Pro Bowls that did this. Donovan McNabb did this. Joe Flacco did this. Trent Dilfer did this. There are only a handful of guys that can read boundary to bound or sideline to sideline. Count them on one hand. But you can't put players in positions that their mechanics and their DNA don't allow them to do. I said this when Marcus got drafted. Bill Pullen was on the set. He argued with me. I said, Bill, let's wait 4 years and see who's right or who's wrong. And I've been right. With his mechanics, the way he loads the ball up, okay, and this is really technical, but he gets out of sequence. The ball gets behind his core as it rotates because of how he lifts the ball. Okay? When you do that, then when you have to rush a throw, you lose accuracy because you're not sequenced. The opposite of this is Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. The ball never gets outside of their core. So as they pull it back, it's inside their core. As their hip goes, it's inside their core. And as they release it, it times up with their body rotation. It's ground force becoming rotational force. What Marcus does is when he lifts it, it never goes back. It goes up. So when he rotates, it goes back behind his head. So now he's got to time it up at the release point. And it's fine. There's a lot of guys that have done this. So to one and two, you can do that because we call it planning your throw. When you can plan your throw, you can rip it. He can throw it as good as anybody. And he's a great kid and he's a leader and he's tough. He's everything you want. The problem is when you're working through a progression, I'm trying to throw the hook route, guy buzzed underneath it, I'm going inside, tight end's covered, I got to hit a back out of the backfield, you're rushing that throw because your eyes and brain have said, now to the back. Well, the ball's here. It's not here.
Up, not.
It's up, not. It's up and back. It's not loaded inside of his cylinder. So now when he has to rush it, it's shrapnel. Well, when he's put in an offense where that's part of his reads, that's where the production goes down. So, and again, we're talking about Marcus. We're in Tennessee. This will probably get taken out of context. I love Marcus Mariota, but I want to coach him, and I want to build the offense around him. Whoever I have at Lipscomb Academy is going to have limitations. You know what? He's still going to throw for 4,000 yards. Mark my words. And he's probably going to throw for 42 touchdowns because we're going to do exactly what this kid does well. And we're not going to do the stuff he doesn't do well. And I think Marcus has been put in a situation at times in his career to go be a full-fuel Reed Tom Brady quarterback. It's not who he is. Let him be who he is, and he'll go to 5 Pro Bowls and earn every bit of the $21 million. But right now, I'm not paying him I'm not extending him unless I know that my offensive coordinator is doing exactly what he does well all the time.
And is that the number one charge of Arthur Smith,
yes,
the new offensive coordinator?
Yes, and people get caught up in resumes and this and that. And I love Vrabes, and I trust Vrabes in his decision-making. I don't know Arthur very well. But I got to believe this meeting went something like this. What's your plan for Marcus Mariota? And that was the whole meeting. It's not how we're going to get Henry the ball more. What are you doing on the front? You know, what are your schemes? What's your screen game? What's your RPO game? Blah, blah, blah. That never came up. What are you going to do to bring out the best in our guy that's eating up $21 million next year of the cap and that we have to make a decision on to extend long term? Because that's the fate of our team. And that's the fate of our jobs. If you're Mike Vrabel, you care about one thing and one thing only, Marcus Mariota. Because I can't go pay defensive players. I can't extend offensive linemen. I can't go be active in free agency unless we know what's happening at that position.
Trent, what you're describing, it goes beyond, as you said, at number 8 here in Nashville with Mariota. But on surface level, it sounds very simple what you're saying. Get the most out of the player.
Yes.
Why are coordinators and coaches, for lack of a better term, stubborn and sticking with their ways instead of adapting to the players they inherit and acquire?
In my experience, the worst coaches in football are in the National Football League. Now, the best are too. The very best are. But some of the worst are. And here's why. Because they're ambition coaches, not passion coaches. When you're coaching high school football, you're probably doing it because you're passionate about it. You're coaching college football for the most part. We're not talking SEC, all power. But a lot of college coaches have turned down pro jobs because they care about the kids. It's the passion. It's getting the most from the kid. Giving the kid a chance to go do something later, not me go do something later. The NFL is about me. It is the me league from players and coaches. And people make fun of the players that way, but it's the coaches too. They're looking for their next job. You know what coaches do the last quarter of the season? They're on the phone getting their next job. Every one of them is sitting there politicking for their next job because they want to climb the ladder. They want a different title. They want a little more money. They want to go to somebody else that treats them better. You know, that's the NFL way. Now, it's not Vrabes' way. You guys got a good situation here because he was a college guy that went to the NFL who was with a great coach in Houston, too. So he sees the right way to do it, the Belichickian Urban Meyer way, which is probably two of the best models in all of football. But that model's not everywhere. These are rogue agents in the NFL going to look for their next thing about them. So it becomes less about the player and way more about their scheme. You know what happened this year in Minnesota? That came out, but that's all the time. A coach calling plays for his resume instead of what's best for his team. I lived that a bunch of times in my career.
You mentioned passion versus ambition,
yeah,
in coaching. If anyone watched you with the Elite 11 and the work you did there, they could see the passion you had in instructing and coaching quarterbacks. How much fun was that for you? And is there a specific...
I'm still doing it, by the way. Everything's
up. Oh, yeah. But
I still get to do it.
How much fun is it? And what's the success story that jumps to mind of something you saw in a kid in that process and you knew they could be special and maybe they didn't know it at the time?
Okay, so I have two questions. First question is, really the core of it was two things. One, I parented my kids this way. You don't have to make the mistake to learn from it. That's a lie. Whoever made that up is an idiot. You want somebody else to make a mistake and learn from it. So that's what I've taught my kids. So my kid doesn't have to go have 3 tequila shots and throw up to realize that 3 tequila shots is too much, right? You want your best friend to do it and go, that doesn't look fun. She's got puke in her hair. I don't want to do that. Right? People are laughing because we've all done it.
Yeah.
So my girls have learned, like, watch your friends make the mistakes. Don't go make the mistakes. So in the quarterback world, I was like, I'm going to tell these kids all the pitfalls coming because you know what? I made every mistake you could possibly make. At one point in time, I was the worst football player in the National Football League. The worst player. Take every special teams kid. I was the most destructive player my second year. Awful. Brutal. So I've been there. I've also won a Super Bowl. I've also been to a Pro Bowl. I've thrown, you know, I've done all this stuff every which way, and I want the kids not to make the mistakes I made. And that's very simple. That was the core principle when I took over, was I'm going to now spread the message around the country. You don't have to throw the interception. You don't have to throw the in route versus quarters, because you know the quarter safety is doubling number one when two goes to the flat. It's a basic principle. I had to learn it the hard way. I'm going to teach them so they never throw an interception on that play. Okay. The second was I lost a son when he was 5 and a half. I didn't get a chance to parent boys. And this was my chance to be around teenage boys that were about the same age that my son would have been, and to pour into their life like I would. And my daughters wanted me to do that. My three girls wanted me to have that experience. So those were the two passions behind it. The success stories, number one comes to mind is David Blau, who just got done with his career at Purdue. David, when we found him, it was probably 1 o'clock in the morning, probably my second glass of wine, watching Elite 11 film, because that's what I used to do in the day. The kids would go to bed at 9:30, wife would go to bed at 10, and I would stay up from about 10 to 2 and watch high school tape and write reports on these kids, so that when I went to the regional, I knew these kids like the back of my hand. And I'm watching this small little school in Texas, and I'm watching this kid just compete and deal, and he has everything you want, but he's 5'11 or something like that. He's got one or two stars. I'm like, this kid's special. So we go to Texas for a regional, and it was at the Star that year. It was the first year the Star was open. And Tony Romo's a guest speaker for me. So Tony comes out, gives a great talk. And then Tony, I said, Tony, what drill do you want to work? He goes, I want to take this drill down the end zone, touchdown, check down is what we call the drill. So Tony's working the drill the whole day, and he's like, dude, you got a kid over here. You got to come see. I'm like, let me guess, who his name's David Blau, isn't it? He goes, yep. And so Tony Romo and me are the only two people in the world that think this kid's any good. Coaches don't think he's good because he got stars. Because 247, who I like, love those guys, don't like the other ones. Like 247, they have him as one star guy or two star guy, I can't remember. And so and so, scout.com or ESPN or whoever the guru is, doesn't think he's any good because he only threw for a couple thousand yards, didn't have the numbers. Well, this kid's a baller. So we invite him. And all of a sudden he gets an offer. Once he gets one offer, he has three offers. Once he has three offers, he has eight offers. Once he has eight, you know, and it just snowballs for him. And he goes on, and he's made more of an impact at Purdue maybe than any player's ever had on that campus. This kid has changed the campus. Now, he's a really good quarterback, but he's changed the campus. He's an unbelievable kid. Tua would be number two. Tua, for as great as he was, even when I saw him, never would have been what he is. And he'd be the first to tell you that if we didn't get our hands on him. Because Tua had been told how great he was his whole life. And Tua could show up in a room and throw a football like Aaron Rodgers. Day one. I saw that. I'm not an idiot. Tua couldn't do anything else. He was so undisciplined. He ran this weird Juden Jones offense in high school. He had no timing. He basically was a butcher. He would just run around and rip fire and knock kids over. And Lane even told me when they were recruiting him, was like, you got to teach him something this spring. Because we can't teach it. We don't have enough time when he gets here. But this kid is the greatest kid ever, will do anything you say, and is as talented as any human you'll ever see. Sure enough, everything Lane said was true. And I ripped Tua. I made him stand up in front of all of his peers. I said, Tua, here's the thing that pisses me off more than anything else, is when talented kids don't have discipline. Because the sky's the limit for you, and you can be as good as anybody, but you have to fix this. And I promise you, if you don't fix this, you will never play college football. Now, to Tua and his dad's credit, and I love them both like son and peer, his dad, they went back to this high school park in Hawaii, and every day for the next month, they did the drills that I told them they needed to do, to the point that when he came back a month later to Southern California where our finals were, he was the best I'd ever seen at the drills that he was the worst at 1 month earlier. Tua is special. I know he played like crap in the national championship game. He'd be the first to tell you that. But he is so special with his ability, not just talent-wise, but his ability to change. And that's what great players do, is they change. The coach says, change this, and they do it. And Tua can do that.
Jarrett Garantano,
yeah,
at Tennessee. Wanted to ask your thoughts on him, having worked with him at Elite 11.
He has one of the naturally strongest arms we've ever seen. Him, Brandon Wimbush, a handful of others. Those guys typically don't make it unless they develop another level of their craft. And I started to see that last year with Jarrett. I think he's starting to realize he just can't throw it through people. You have to throw it around people and over people and throw it early. And So I saw some development there. Here's why he'll make it, though, is because he has the it. He's got the grit. He's tough mentally and physically. You saw the beating he took last year at times and just keeps getting up and bringing on. He's a kid you want. If you're going to play pickup three-on-three at the schoolyard, you know, you want him on your team because he's going to go glove their number one guy and not let him breathe all day long. Like, he's that kind of competitor. For that reason, he'll make it, and that's why Vols fans should be excited. But he definitely is in the building stage. You know, there's building stages in quarterback development. He's still in the elementary building phases. And we think because a kid's talented, that means he's good. And that's a lie. He's talented. He has a chance to be good if he builds the right way. So they have a lot of work to do this spring before he's good.
Things that only high school coaches know that you now know. Sharing athletes.
Yeah.
At a place like Lipscomb Academy or anywhere is top of mind for most coaches. Being respectful of other sports. We talked earlier off air about you encourage your players and athletes to play other sports, but also at times maybe recruiting players from other sports to come and play your sport,
yep,
regardless of what you're coaching. How's that gone for you so far?
Well, I'm a four-sport athlete in high school. 92% NFL quarterbacks are dual-sport athletes. Urban Meyer only recruited dual sport athletes for years. It's becoming more mainstream to want to see a kid play two sports or three sports because you get to see him interact in a different team environment. You get to see him maybe not be the dude in one sport and how easy is as the fourth guy instead of the best guy. They learn how to compete better. They learn how to lose because you don't win in everything. So you learn how to climb the mountain just for metaphorically. And it develops their overall skill set. It keeps them healthier. The problem with one sport is you're doing the same movement patterns all the time because it's one sport and you have one position, so you're always moving the same way. Playing another sport allows you to move other ways and challenges you athletically and develops you athletically. At Lipscomb, we just don't have enough boys to have them just play one sport. So I make them play another sport because I want to elevate the other team. Our basketball team is going to be really, really good. We've lost a bunch of close games this year. I was at the one last night against NBA. We had it won, but we're starting two sophomores and a senior. They're going to be good. They're learning how to win. But in 2 years from now, watch out. Lipscomb County basketball is going to be smoking hot. Our baseball team, Brad Coons, our new head baseball coach, played Major League Baseball, is a dude, knows how to build a program. I want my football players part of that program. Our soccer coach is a celebrated European soccer coach. We have three football players on his team right now. It's good for everybody. The challenge is the things you don't know are coming. How do you schedule spring ball? Right? How do you handle AP exams at the end of May? How do you handle finals? How do you handle a culture of administration that's been academics first, which is great. I've told them, I have three daughters. They are all straight A students. They're also all Americans. You can do both. So it's that balance of, again, changing the narrative to that you can only be good academically, or you only could be good in one sport, or you only can be good in two sports but not good academic. You only be socially integrated if you're doing this. And my argument, and you will hear me preach this around the city, is that if you're chasing greatness, greatness overflows in everything that you do, right? I wasn't a good TV guy because I wanted to be good in TV. I was good in TV because I wanted to be a good football guy. I was a good parent because I was trying to be good at everything. And the overflow of that affected TV, affected football, affected parenting, coaching, whatever it is. And that's what they can learn. That's what these kids just walked in here can learn, is that go be great at everything that you do, not just one thing. Because if you're chasing greatness, if you're trying to reach your potential, the overflow of that, you're just better at everything. And that's the lesson of dual sport athletes. That's the lesson of a high academic institution that challenges you spiritually, emotionally, play three sports, get straight A's, and be socially integrated. People go, that's impossible. I said, no, it's not. Go to Stanford right now. That's their entire flipping campus. Go to Princeton. That's their whole campus. Kids that said, you know what? I can be good at everything because I'm trying to be the best I can be. That's what we're going to do at Lipscomb.
Lipscomb Academy head coach Trent Dilfer has been our live guest for the last hour. Trent, A, people are rating it as one of the best hours in the history of our show, which is no small compliment because we're fantastic.
You guys are awesome, by the way.
And B, they're demanding that you be at least a quarterly guest, if not a weekly guest.
I'm in.
You're in. So there's the contract. That sounded like it was written in blood.
It's like the bullet handshake.
When he says it,
we should do it for my office. They're making me a Lipscomb. It's going to be sick.
Dude, we'll do it wherever you need. But that sounded like a binding social contract. So no further discussion is required. And we thank you dearly. And listen, you're going to have a lot of other people asking. So you're going to have to obviously prioritize. And we understand that you understand.
Exactly. You're one. And there's no two, three, or four.
Bang! There it is. We'll talk to you after these messages.
Trent, this has been a great free agent pickup for Nashville. We're glad you're here, and things are going to rock and roll for sure at Lipscomb Academy.
And I'm fired up. The people I've met, do we have 10 seconds
yeah,
just
sure.
to thank the people of Nashville? I cannot tell you, everywhere I've been, I might even tear up. People have never been nicer in my entire life. There is a soul to this city.
Cry to cap it off. It'll be perfect.
The soul to this city is special. I mean special, and I can't wait to meet everybody.
No tears. False promises from Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer has been our guest. This is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's.